This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Patres! 3 weeks from now, I will be harvesting my crops. Imagine where you will be. And it will be so. Hold the line. Stay with me. If you find yourself alone, riding in green fields with the sun on your face, do not be troubled. For you are in Elysium, and you're already dead! Brothers, what we do in life echoes in eternity.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Popcorn Culture. I'm Lee Chui Lin, and in the studio with me, Sharmila Ganesan. And then joining us from home is Arvin Yuvaraj. And today, as you might have guessed, it is Throwback Tuesday, and we are looking at a movie that is 20 years old, and that is 2000's Gladiator.
I'll confess right up that this is the first time I've watched Gladiator. And honestly, I didn't realize it's one of those movies that I kept thinking, I will get to it. And it's been 20 years, guys. And oh my God, I'll just like you guys go on first. I'm just like, why has it taken me this long to watch this amazing movie?
Yeah. I was gonna ask, like, do you regret watching it so late? Like, do you wish you watched it in the cinema in 2000?
I do, because you know, I'm like, I am entertained. Why have I waited this long?
Gladiator is the movie that kind of, it prevented me from enjoying all the other movies that came after, because there were a bunch of movies that tried to be Gladiator. But because of how good it was, I sort of brushed off all the other ones and went like, yeah, you're never going to be as good as Russell Crowe's magnum opus. And it's such a good film.
So it is... In case you, like Sharmila, somehow missed it the first time round, it was a box office smash. It was this huge epic that hit the cinemas. And basically, it tells the story of a Roman general, Maximus Decimus Meridius. You have to say it in a certain way. And basically, what happens is it's in the end of Marcus Aurelius's reign. There is a little bit of, or, you know, quite a lot of a power struggle between him and his son Commodus. And essentially... he falls from his position as a general to become an enslaved gladiator. His family, you know, bad things happen there. And the movie is essentially a vengeance flick, right? It's about him trying to take revenge against the people who took everything from him.
Mm. And it's also this, as you said, it's this grand epic depiction of the Roman Empire and this idea. A lot of what it stood for and what it did, the idea of empire building and democracy and that struggle between an emperor versus the Senate. So it actually covers, it for a movie that in my mind over time has just grown to encompass Russell Crowe in that outfit against a dusty background. It's actually a movie that has a lot going on. It has a lot of politics. It has a lot of, I suppose, moral conflicts at the heart of it, which I think in some ways watching now as an adult helps.
And also for a movie that has so much going on, it's not a flashy film. So I think that's what I like about it a lot. It's not, it doesn't take the route of going like super wide shots, you know, big shots of the city, lots of CGI. It's a very dry looking film, except it is beautiful to look at. But it isn't flashy in the sense that it is not showing off. But it is a very big movie in terms of scope, in terms of runtime, in terms of characters. They're all larger than life. It's also not a historic retelling. It's like a historical film, but then they make up a lot of people to tell this story. And it's a very, I won't call it humble, but it knows exactly what it is and what it's trying to do. And that's be an action film within the context of a historical quote-unquote biopic.
So it's really interesting to me that you said it's not flashy, because I think that is kind of a Ridley Scott quality, because Ridley Scott, of course, directed the film. And, you know, the reconstruction, the digital reconstruction of the Colosseum between, you know, kind of building a sort of plaster plywood situation and then completing the rest of it digitally, I think that alone was like $1 million. So it's one of those things where if you remember Alien and the first time you see the ship, the scale is insane. But you don't necessarily leave it thinking that that was all flash and no substance. And I think Gladiator is much the same. You get these great panning shots of the Colosseum. You get the palace and people, you know, kind of marching around and, I don't know, trying to poison each other. And through all of it, it doesn't necessarily feel... it doesn't necessarily feel like it's spectacle for spectacle's sake, with, I think, the exception of the moment where Commodus enters Rome. But I think that that's quite specific and it's meant to evoke that feeling of Cleopatra, as well as, I think I read somewhere that it was based off of Leni Riefenstahl's Triumph of the Will. So that's what they were going for.
So I think it's interesting that you talk about spectacle so much, because one thing I realized watching this through fresh eyes is how little the spectacle, the effects have aged. And I think we talked about this with Jurassic Park as well. There were a couple of scenes where, you know, there are like some CGI tigers where you can almost see Maximus pass through one of them. So not great. But overall, the crowd scenes, the Colosseum, the, you know, these great shots of the battlefield, they look real. The same way Blade Runner still looks great. I think Ridley Scott is one of those filmmakers that... he is quite a visionary filmmaker. And you can see that in Gladiator, that 20 years later, it still looks as thrilling as I imagine it would have when it first came out.
I mean, it's because of all the textures and stuff, the suits that they wear, how grimy they look, how dirty it looks. Even the Colosseum looks so... like, you wouldn't want to spend any amount of time in a setting like that. It's way too crowded. It's way too noisy. It's way too hot. And the suits that they wear look real. And a lot of shows have tried to put themselves in that period, you know, Spartans and warriors and soldiers and stuff. And more often than not, the suits will look glossy, or they look too red, or they look too gold, for whatever reason. But Gladiator doesn't do that. It's like, if the suit's dirty because it's been through a war, then obviously it's going to look rusty and brownish, and not something pretty to look at, which gives it that sort of tactile feel and gives it that sort of realism as well. Another thing that I want to talk about, I think we can get to this later, is how real Maximus looks and how real Russell Crowe looks in that role. Because normally you wouldn't choose someone who looks like Russell Crowe to be the Gladiator.
So Russell Crowe, I think, really is the heart of the film, right? Because it's his journey that you follow. It's his desperation, I think, in many ways, to have his revenge that drives the heart of the movie. And it's such a good performance. I remember being so moved by it when I first watched it in cinemas, when I was, I think now perhaps too young to watch people get beheaded with shields. But I remember watching it and being so moved. And now as an adult, and you know, he won the Oscar for this performance. And I think that it's a great one to win for, simply because it's not actually all that showy. He has great speeches, he has his moments, but a lot of the time he's just sort of standing around and being quite reserved. A lot of the performance is in the reserve.
And or rather, I had forgotten what a big deal Russell Crowe was at one point of time. And that was definitely the Gladiator phase, was probably the high point, because he's not really there now. But he's always been a great actor. He's always an actor that when he's in a film directed by someone that you think would make a good film, Russell Crowe always delivers. And watching Gladiator, I realized exactly what you just said. Those rousing speeches that under a lesser actor would probably feel very cheesy, watching it in something like Gladiator feels so real and so lived that you can't help but get swept away, even though so much of it feels larger than life. Those moments feel very, very real.
And those rousing speeches are also quiet. It's in a way that only Russell Crowe can deliver. He's not yelling it. He's not shouting it. And also, normally, if you would cast someone to be a gladiator, you choose someone like 6 foot tall, 6 foot five, you know, really built, really bulk, blonde hair, that sort of thing. You know, the stereotypical sort of gladiator look. But Russell Crowe is sort of short of stout. He isn't a loud person. And even when he delivers those speeches, those iconic, the iconic dialogue, it isn't meant to be powerful. It's soft and it's sort of like sometimes even whispers, but it comes off like so, so strong in the end.
Okay, so we're just about to take a break, but before we do, I wanted to ask you guys, is this a genre of movie that you actually like?
Epics?
Not epics. Swords and Sandals, right? That, you know, mm-hmm. the Ben-Hur Spartacus mm-hmm. sort of thing that I think feels a little bit dated because we don't see this all that often. And there was a time where Hollywood was utterly fascinated by ancient Rome and kept returning to that well. And then for many decades, it did not. Is this a world that you guys enjoy inhabiting? Because sometimes the dust puts me off, to be perfectly honest. And I don't always care for this particular setting in history, but I found Gladiator very immersive.
I actually love this genre. I generally, even really bad films like Alexander, which are of this genre, I watch them, I might hate watch them, but I still would. Yeah, so I'm a fan.
I'm not. Gladiator is the movie that actually made me like the genre even more. So I went back and watched older movies in this period because of Gladiator. But normally, movies that are like this, like Swords and Sandals and stuff, I would avoid. Because like you said, like it's a world that I don't want to be in. It's uncomfortable. It's hot. It's grimy. Nothing about it appeals until this movie came out.
So we're talking today about Gladiator, which turned 20 years old this year. Have you rewatched it recently? Are you one of those people who can quote anything that Maximus says in the film? You know, let us know your feelings and your thoughts. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back. This is Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
How dare you show your back to me? Slave! You will remove your helmet and tell me your name.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies of the North, general of the Felix Legions, loyal servant to the true emperor, Marcus Aurelius, father to a murdered son, husband to a murdered wife, and I will have my vengeance in this life or the next.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. And today we're throwing it back on Throwback Tuesday to Ridley Scott's 2000 epic Gladiator. So there was something that I wanted to raise with you guys. And we've talked about Russell Crowe being at the heart of it. We've talked about Ridley Scott and his visionary direction. We haven't talked that much about the writing. And it turns out that that's because there wasn't that much writing done. and I think it actually shows. You know, when you rewatch the film, at the time you get swept away by, you know, the Battle of Germania, you know, just the Colosseum, the fights. But when you rewatch it and you realize that the dialogue sometimes I think is very sparse or different actors, they're very true to character, but the spirit of the dialogue sometimes feels different from character to character. And that I think came from the fact that they had very little script when they began shooting, and it was a very consultative process. Actors weighed in. I think Russell Crowe once maybe almost walked off because of the lack of writing. What do you guys make of that?
Well, I mean, they replaced a lot of it with meaningful stares from everyone. and luckily, you know, Russell Crowe, Joaquin Phoenix, Connie Nielsen, they're all great at meaningful stares.
Oliver Reed,
yeah. So mm-hmm. definitely worked well. I really wouldn't have thought so if you hadn't pointed it out, to be honest. And I think that's to the film's credit, that it really papers over those flaws really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were stories that came out around Gladiator saying that it was a movie that shouldn't have worked. Like, it shouldn't have been financed. Like, studios shouldn't have given it that much money or shouldn't have trusted Ridley Scott enough to even make the movie. Because on paper, it sounded like an action film that took place in the Colosseum. Because there's scene after scene after scene and set piece after set piece of him just going against a bunch of opponents, right? That's just it. So it is a very performance-driven film. I don't think it would have worked if it didn't have all these, like, good actors in it. Joaquin Phoenix, for one. Like, if he wasn't the bad guy, I don't think that role would have worked. Like, a lesser actor would have played it off as, again, like, cheesy or too straight or wouldn't have known what to do with that much, you know, all the notes that were given to him. So I think if you take away all those elements, then, yeah, there's not much in the film. It's held up by the people who are in it.
And I think that that speaks to the value, and I don't think this always works, but I think it does speak to the value of allowing actors to shape their own lines, you know, and asking an actor, what would your character say in this instance? Because I think something like Strength and Honor was something that was born just from Russell Crowe, thinking that, yeah, this is an appropriate thing to say. And it really works, you know, when you hear it, you're like, yes, mm-hmm. I will follow you into battle. So I thought that that was cool. Also, that mention of Joaquin Phoenix, we should talk about simply because, yeah, I mean, I think at this point in his career, he's really well known for playing intense, slightly twisty characters, you know, who perhaps come with some damage. But I first saw him as Commodus. So I never once thought that he would never be able to play. Like, for me, you know, watching this and seeing the through line to Arthur Fleck, it's really right there. It's really easy to see.
Yeah, it was one of his early career-making roles, right? And even though I never watched the film, I remember everyone talking about Joaquin Phoenix in Gladiator and mostly how creepy he was. But now having watched it, I think calling him creepy really does that character and his performance a disservice because it's so layered and it's so nuanced. And
it's so hurt. There's a lot of hurt at the center of it, but my God, he's awful.
I know. It's someone that you really hate, but you can't take your eyes off him when he's on screen.
Do you know that I avoided Joaquin Phoenix movies because of this role? Because I was kind of disgusted. I was like, oh, this guy is so gross. And I hate him so much that I didn't want to watch like other movies that he was in. Like I would avoid it because I would connect him so much to the role that he played in Gladiator for like a long, long time. I only changed my perception after watching Her. And until then, every single
role... Wow, that's a long gap.
No, that's a long, long time. Like every other thing that he would do, I would see some sort of that sort of snakishness in him, and that grossness would keep coming out, and I'd be like, I cannot take you as a good person because of what you did in this film. So that's how I think that's how powerful this role was. And also, I would love to see him play like a villain, like a straight up villain, like what he did in this movie again, which he hasn't done since. Joker aside, I don't think he has come back to this role since 2000.
Yeah, and I think that that's because this role is just so indelible. With a hero as compelling and as fundamentally good as Maximus, I think you definitely need a Commodus, on the other hand, who is amoral at best, you know, and sort of slithering around doing stuff. And in the midst of all this, I did also want to talk about Connie Nielsen's character, who is it Lucilla?
Lucilla.
Yes, she is one of one woman in this movie. There's basically...
Yes.
Yeah, no fact, one else. Yeah. But
well, we have his wife who has brief scenes.
Yes, and no words.
Yeah.
But she is fantastic. I think that, you know, while you have the men kind of playing off each other as these huge, strong foils, she's very instrumental in having you understand the inner workings of Rome, you know, and what it is that you have to do in order to survive in the court there. And I think she plays fear and strength together and that blend really, really well.
It made me think about how we talk a lot about representation now in terms of what it means to make movies that are historically based and to present authentic stories of women. And watching this movie that's 20 years old, I realize that's actually a great example of it. A film that realistically couldn't place women at its center very well, especially the battle scenes or the gladiator scenes, but managed to create a role that still speaks so well to the realities of being a woman in that time.
I think that's a Ridley Scott thing, right? I mean, he's done this in like a bunch of movies where it's not clear where exactly he's going with it. Like, you're not sure if it is representation or he's just putting a woman into the role because the role needs a woman. But he's done this like time and time again where it's kind of ambiguous. But if you study it later, it shows a lot of progressiveness, I think, and a lot of thought behind the casting choice and the writing and what he has done. Also, I wanted to talk about Hans Zimmer. Did you guys, like, if you watch the movie now, did you pick up on the Pirates of the Caribbean theme during the fight scenes? Because this is where he composed it. Like, this is where the theme comes from. I think he had, like, 2 weeks to compose the theme for Pirates, and he plucked it out of Gladiator. So it comes on
again
and again.
That's the most bizarre. My brain is, like, exploding right now.
I did hear it. I think maybe because for people who are rewatching it, right, like, Arvin and I were less sort of completely thrust into the story. I did hear it. I didn't put it together, but I did hear, like, the moment that dun, 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 dun. And I was like, wait, hold on. All right. So we have just about a couple of minutes left. And I wanted to close with, do you guys want a sequel? Because there have been a lot of conversations over the years, I think since 2002 or something, as early as that, about how they were going to do it. And I was reading about the different incarnations that they thought of. So I think Russell Crowe wanted to resurrect Maximus. Not exactly sure where that was going. There was also some discussion of doing a prequel. And then
there's a kid. You could do his future.
So that, I think, is actually where we are now. So as of 2019, I want to say, they were looking into doing a story on Lucius.
Right.
Yes, who is the son of Lucilla and the nephew of Commodus.
I don't want a sequel. I think what I want are more films like this. And I don't necessarily mean Rome, but these kinds of big epic films that are still meditative and give time for the story to develop. Because I feel like that art has been kind of lost or shelved for a while.
Yeah, I think the script that was written was so Maximus comes back to life, or he's resurrected or something, and then he comes back from hell, and then he has to fight like a bunch of gladiators and gods, and he ends up in modern times as a soldier or a marine or something. That is a script.
Wait, is this an actual script?
No, it sounds like fanfic. Oh my god, this is a thing. Apparently, they did a lot of research into like Roman afterlife. You know, mythology and stuff, so that they could do this. This is what they ended up with.
I'm saying no right off.
I'm saying yes, for sure. Like, I want to see that. I want to see, like, part two, and I want to see, like a whole saga. But no. But honestly, no, I don't want to see. Like, don't touch this film. Like, don't remake it. Just leave it alone. I don't think it needs to continue. It's perfectly fine as is.
Agreed. Gladiator is a... I mean, I'm happy it exists. I'm happy to rewatch it for as long as it's around. I think as it ages, you see some of the grand speech cracks, but part of me just loves it more for that. I'm
completely
not sure.
I get it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is, but it just is a film that works. So yeah, we've been talking today about Gladiator. Tell us your thoughts. Is it one of your favorites? Is it something you dislike? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. If you want to write to us, you can do so at movies@bfm.my. And you can find us at BFM Popcorn on both Twitter and Instagram. This is Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.